Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to have a fellow IPOer, a very successful professional from Bangkok, Dr. James Mabey. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure being here.
James is the Managing Director of Standard International. He's the Non-Executive Director of the Silong Silo Group, which is in real estate. He's a professor of hotel strategy at the Hong Kong Polytechnic School of Hotel Management. He's the chair of YPO Southeast Asia Angels Chapter. He is an MBA, has a law degree, has a PhD in hospitality and tourism management. My God, what an incredible accomplishment, James. Congratulations.
Oh, well, I've had a lot of great opportunities to be in cities with some great schools and great mentors that have kind of helped me find some good opportunities to study throughout my career. So it's been a fun journey.
Fantastic. So tell me, you know, at the outset, what would be three key milestones in your life or your career?
That is a very good question. But I would say, taking a step back, my thought on this is along the lines of what Jim Collins talked about in his book, Good to Great, of the flywheel concept. And I know everyone's familiar with that. It's nothing new by any means. But of course, the idea being that you've got a 5,000-pound, you know, flywheel that's positioned on an axis in the middle. And it's about, you know, there's not any one huge effort that makes that spin immediately, but it's a slow and consistent effort. So I guess the conclusion from that I draw is, me personally, and even talking to other people who are starting their career, it's that, you know, there's not necessarily going to be huge progressive jumps. There's often, it's just kind of that low, that slower but consistent effort. That being said, of course, there are things that happen, transitions from one company to another, where in my life, I've been very lucky and blessed to have people who have mentored me and given me opportunities. One of them would have been actually, as you mentioned, when Dean Kachon, the Dean of Hong Kong Polytechnic School of Hotel and Tourism Management, helped to guide me and throughout my studies there to earn a doctorate of hotel and tourism management. So his mentorship was great. But then along the way, you know, those steps up in my career with Marco Polo Wharf Hotels or Jumeirah or here at Standard. So, I mean, it's easy to point out a few points like that, but generally I would say, you know, it's about a slow, consistent effort. So there's not necessarily huge jumps.
Fantastic. So, you know, you worked for almost all the major hotel brands. Tell me about the Standard International Group. Which are some of their hotels?
Oh, sure. So Standard International is established approximately 20 years ago in the United States, which is a leader in the lifestyle space. It's a hotel company that's very much socially conscious and active, and a company that is about building hotels where the social spaces and the public spaces are creating platforms for people to engage with each other and have a good guest experience. Very design, art-led, driven, very cool, interesting place to work. A great team.
Okay. So, you know, you are a hotel and tourism professional. You are sitting in Bangkok, which till the pandemic was one of the hot spots of tourism. What is, in your opinion, the impact the pandemic is having on the hotel and tourism industry? And what is your opinion on what will happen going forward?
The effects have been obviously very, very bad and will continue to have some long-term effects. Mm-hmm. However, I think that there is a lot of potential upside to be had in the long run. The realities are, this is a learning experience for the world. And while this is devastating and the loss of life is tragic, it could have been a lot worse. So it's a good wake-up call in many respects about how to react when something like this happens and how to prepare for it. The bounce back of the industry is going to really depend on one thing, which is just the timing of the vaccine, the timing of herd immunity, or whatever it is. Essentially, There's a lot of pessimism in the market, I think, but it's unfounded in many regards, other than the question of timing. If the companies within the industry go bankrupt before a solution is found, then there is a very difficult long-term road ahead. If the companies can stay solvent and time to reopen, then I think it's already been seen. There's the talk of it, but it's been seen in places like China, where some places like Sanya are having one of the best years they've ever had on record, because you have this revenge tourism thing going on where people will flood out into open spaces they weren't able to before. Mm-hmm. So essentially, I guess I would say again, as long as it does not last too long, then things will bounce back quickly. If it lasts long enough that all of the companies go bankrupt, then it's going to be difficult.
I agree with you. In fact, you know, I'm in India, and we're beginning to see a huge improvement in domestic tourism. I mean, you know, me and my wife, every second or third week, I'm just driving off somewhere, and, you know, you go to these luxury hotels, and there's not a room to be had for love or for money.
Yes, so it's true.
It's obviously beginning to turn now.
A lot of the destinations, even within, within countries, within Indonesia, within Vietnam, the resort destinations outside of the major cities are actually, many of them, doing quite well. Mm. So it's an interesting, you know, no one would have ever expected this. No one, you know, was really anticipating something like this happening. And there's a lot of interesting variables at play that are shaping how the industry is moving forward.
So let's set the pandemic aside, and, you know, I'm sure we'll get over it fast. Soon. But let's talk a little bit about what travelers are seeking, you know, before the pandemic and post the pandemic. From my understanding of the millennials, everyone's seeking experiences. You know, it's not just that, you know, I want to go to an expensive hotel, etc., etc. What is your view on how the travel industry is going to start changing for travelers to start seeking experiences?
Sure, that's something I think that's, if we looked more holistically about consumer behavior, it seems as part of the cycle, as part of a trend where people move to be, you know, aligned with luxury goods, material items, and the brand affiliation with tangible things. And then as they move up the progression, the ladder in terms of consumer behavior, they in all facets of business, they start to be more experience driven. So that's in a place like a hotel, of course, or resort is all about the experience. Mm-hmm. And it's because a hotel is much more than just the physical building itself. Obviously, the type of atmosphere, the vibe that is injected into the hotel by its guests, but of course the employees is really key to that. So we'll continue to see that. I mean, as you've mentioned now, with millennials, with Gen Z, they are spending a much higher percentage of their disposable income on experiences than previous generations versus material goods. It will definitely continue to be that way.
Okay. Again, you know, I spent my first 4 or 5 years, the first 17 years of my life was with India Tobacco, which owns ITC hotels in India. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, from a stage where you got these luxury hotels and the big brands, etc., to the budget hotels, to the Airbnbs, to the Oyo hotels, to homestays, you know, the entire travel spectrum seems to be getting wider and wider. What happens to the big brand hotels?
Well, they've been very successful in consolidating smaller companies and brands so that they have a very good economy of scale in order to drive their marketing platforms and distribution systems. Right. That is, I mean, you know, partially behind is the Marriott takeover of Starwood, for instance. This is about distribution. It's interesting. We can see a mirrored kind of concept, I think, in what's happened in the entertainment industry with Disney launching their streaming system. because you have very much a question about content versus distribution. Mm-hmm. Netflix was the big disruptor here. They came in with an amazing distribution system and quickly realized that they had to be able to build the content to go with it. And Netflix did a great job. And what happened, obviously, was Disney said, we are the masters of content. We have so much content. Why don't we build a distribution system? Very, very similar, I think, to what you see with the big brands. They've had the same epiphany, which is not, you know, necessarily remarkable and pretty mm-hmm. obvious in due course. But the large brands have said, we have the content. We need to work on the distribution. Because interestingly, you know, 30 years ago, the online travel agents and other things didn't exist. And now, within a very short period of time, those companies are larger than the hotel companies. They, you know, the companies that, so it's a very strange and it's perplexing to some time in the industry where the people who control the industry are not the ones who control the content. And in terms of the hotel inventory, mm-hmm. it is the distribution system that the online travel agents and those companies are controlling. And so the consolidation of the big brands is in many respects about trying to take back that distribution, which they've had a hard time doing. Mm-hmm. Because traditionally hotel companies are a bit more old fashioned. They're definitely less progressive in terms of technology. And they may argue against that, but the reality is there, the facts are there. So the big brands will continue to grow and acquire and try to compete based on the distribution platform. And smaller brands will continue to pop up or grow based on a more unique experience and a more unique offering, a more bespoke, tailored approach to business. And in the end, you know, the location will matter, the actual individual properties will matter, and it's the team on the ground delivering those experiences, which if they can build that emotional connection with the guests, will lead to long-term profitability and brand loyalty. So it's two different business strategies very much at play. And as the industry develops, the spectrum is beginning to widen, and there, you know, you're going on each side of the extreme. There will be few players in the middle. They'll either be much more bespoke, customized, or larger. The ones in the middle are the ones that will have to adapt.
Terrific. And, you know, in all the large hotel chains that you have run and as a part of Standard International, you must be hiring a lot of people. When you hire people, what do you look for in them?
That's a good question as well, because in any company, of course, you will hear that the people are the most important aspect of the business. That's especially true if you are in a hospitality situation or service industry, because the entire business model that we're talking about, as you said, is experience-based, and the experience is built on the physical product that you have, but even more importantly, by the energy that's inside that, which comes very much from the employees and how they're engaging with the customers. It's that synergy, it's the playing off of the energy of one another that creates the vibe and atmosphere that you need. So when you look to hire people, you know, like any industry, it is the most important thing. I think of a quote from the Oracle of Omaha, actually, who had said that, you know, when you're looking to hire people, he said he looks for three qualities. And the one is integrity, intelligence, and energy are the three. And he said, though, you know, if you don't have the first, then the other two will kill you. He said, if you hire somebody without integrity, you actually want them to be dumb and lazy. So, you know, integrity, loyalty, those are key things that I think you need to look for. At least that I look for personally.
You know, you spoke about hiring people. A very, very senior hotel professional, a very dear friend of, told me once that a good general manager of a hotel is always present at breakfast, because that's the only time they are able to connect with every guest who's in the hotel. What are your thoughts?
Oh, there's a lot of different leadership styles that work in different times and different aspects. So I would be very cautious about pointing out specific things. Some general managers are less hands-on and very, very strategic, and they're very good at leading their teams to execute. Other general managers are more hands-on in the front areas. Mm-hmm. Generally, I feel that the hotels perform better with you need a mix, but with general managers who are mm-hmm. who are in the front office, you know, in the public areas and meeting with the guests and engaging. Those seem to be the people who are more conscious of the guest experience, and I think then have a little bit more focus in that area. The strategy is all great, but you know, nothing again takes the place of having the right type of interaction between the guests. So I would err on the side of having a GM who's out and about and mingling and saying hello, because that would give me more confidence that he's paying more or she's paying more attention to the details in the guest experience.
So one more question on travel and tourism before I move to the next segment. You know, the travel and tourism business is based on a lot of face-to-face communication. With the pandemic and even after it goes away, people are going to get very cautious. How do you see the entire business transitioning from, you know, someone who's there all the time, talking to you, attending to you, to someone who's now going to be sitting far away and communicating?
That is, well, I guess the question is in terms of my question is, are you talking about business travelers, or are you talking about, you know, just the overall nature of
the business? I mean, you know, a lot of personal contact is there, certainly in our part of the world, which is South Asia and Far East and East Asia.
Yes. So, of course, one thing that's coming out of this is that people are learning how to be more reliant on digital systems in order to execute business. Correct. So in many and that's a good thing, because if you're getting, you know, more efficiencies, it is good for business. That's good for growth. And the more growth that we have and the better the economies, then the more money we have to invest in hotels and to invest in other things that are more impactful in terms of guest experiences. So I guess I'd look at two things. One is from a hotel's perspective in terms of business clients, meetings and whatnot that are in hotels, there's going to be an impact that's going to decrease. Also, business travel itself is going to change because people are realizing they don't have to travel as much mm-hmm. for business. Other aspects are going to actually then be heightened. People are going to, you know, people are still going to be traveling. They're still wanting vacations. You can't have a Skype or Zoom vacation to Hawaii or to the Maldives. You know, that's a very personal thing. So yeah. Also, though, to your point about changes moving forward, I'm on the side of the argument that actually believes that you will not feel as much a change as you think moving forward, because this type of catastrophe that we're facing now is something that, while it's not predictable in terms of exactly how it will unfold, it is extremely predictable in terms of the pathway or the chronology of the events. You know, you don't have, previously the disruption in our industry had been about, you know, very big financial problems which were you know at every level of our institutions which caused, you know, huge issues and were multiple events, multiple issues that were compounded, or you had terrorist type of issues, which again are very different. There's been a lot of people saying the current environment will see a lot of changes, as we saw after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. I'm on the side that says I don't believe that, because there's fundamentally it's a very different situation where you have terrorists secretly plotting to hurt people and could be anywhere at any time. Mm. This is a virus. It doesn't have an agenda. It just grows and does what it does. And it has to start somewhere, and it has to grow, and then it has to move. It's not sneaking around an airport. So, you know, in the future, the current lessons we learn will help us be more prepared. And when something like this comes up on the radar, we will react much more swiftly. We'll react much more effectively in order to stop it. And when the threat is not present, then people will act as they did before. They're not going to wear masks. Already in China, they're not wearing masks anymore. The social distancing is not there, you know, and why would it be? Like, this is, again, this is not a surprise. That's, I guess, the difference here between now and previous financial crises and terrorist attacks. This is not a surprise. The virus starts somewhere. You read about it in the news and it spreads. And there's no reason to have to separate tables in restaurants if there's not a present danger. There's no reason to have, you know, seats vacant in the airplanes. If there's not a danger present, that's not going to happen. People won't pay for it. The companies can't afford it. Mm-hmm. That being said, of course, there will be a lot of increased attention paid to overall health and safety in hotels. There'll be more scanners. There'll be more things like that. Mm-hmm. But the fundamental aspects of how people travel and how people live and how people go on vacations, that will continue to be dictated much more by technology advancements than a virus like this.
Well said. Well, I'm completely on your side on this, and I hope we get back to normal as soon as possible. So, James, I've got time for a couple of questions for you personally now. My first question to you is, what does success mean to you?
That's always a tough question, isn't it?
That's why I'm asking you.
I guess the key point there would be, obviously, if you're talking about success, we have a tendency to you know, externally look at success and try to say, well, we need to, you know, build a large company or add a lot of value. There's always that aspect, right? You want to be, you know, I want to be continually growing. I want to have, you know, adding value, having a platform in which I can hopefully make a difference and do things. But I do recognize that it's a constant fight within myself to make sure that the internal side of success is more important. And that's about living up to my own values and expectations, making a difference, supporting the people that I care about. But the internal external kind of conflict is always there. But success to me is more and more about supporting people and causes that I care about and feeling like internally I'm fulfilled and living up to my own expectations and values.
Fantastic. My next question to you is that, you know, great career, looking forward, a lot of success, professor, lawyer, you know, sit on the boards of companies. Where do you draw your inspiration from?
That is a good question. So first of all, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. Just went to law school, but that sounds like something a lawyer would point out. but you never know in the future. But that's a good question. Inspiration. There's the day to day sources of inspiration like nature, music, art, but obviously in the long term for the larger effort in momentum, it's about relationships. You know, it's about working for people you care about. It's about, you know, going to the office every day, fighting for your staff and your team and your partners. It's about relationships.
Wonderful. And my last question to you now, if you, James, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
That's interesting. I think there's a tendency for us to talk a lot about the social aspect, which I think is legitimate, about talking about supporting of social causes and social issues. But personally, I think perhaps equally or maybe even more important is if I could set an example about a more internal awareness, you know, try to help, especially with the younger generation, being more self-aware, more confident, understanding about how they're feeling and making decisions, because so much of what's going on is, as we know, it's about subconscious biases and decision-making. And that's very, very critical, because as the world continues to develop in terms of technology and marketing, you know, we're constantly being manipulated by marketing, by media, by everything. And so, you know, refocusing internally is maybe, you know, even more important. So if I could set a better example of balance and self-awareness and, you know, understanding myself, I don't know exactly how that would play out in the real world, but that feels like something that would be very urgently needed in this time.
That's a great answer. Great answer. James, thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you, Standard International, lots and lots of success.
Thank you, sir. It was wonderful to be with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the brand called You Videocast and Podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world.
Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.